Mr. Fiddler, Real Ted, we've got to the point of the Ardennes, and you just picked up a new old Sherman Firefly, but not your one, which was stuck in Amiens. And were they camouflaged anyway? Had they changed camouflage colour?
Because I think they had been painted white. Now, who painted these, I don't know, but all these, now whether they knew we were going down to the Ardennes or not, I don't know, because there had been a lot of snow during that period of time. But anyway, all the tanks were, as I can remember, was all white.
So what about the move down to the Ardennes then?
We leave Brussels, and that's the whole division, that's the three tank squadrons, three tank regiments. And the roads down to Namur, I think it is, or Dinan, I'm not sure which comes first. And they're absolutely strung out with tanks all the way down.
And you drove down?
We drove the tanks down. We go through some very, very rocky areas, and I can remember that we're really going along a road that's more or less shelved. On their right, there's about a 200-foot drop, sort of into a ravine, and the roads, as you can well imagine, are just iced up, and they're very, very frightening, really, to drive the tanks on the road. Anyway, we get through this place. I'm not sure whether that's Dinan or Namur. I'm not sure. I just can't remember which is the first one we come to. We carry on. I think we pull off the road, and we're moving up all the time, day at a time. We're going up closer to the front. And when I was saying get closer to the front, we are probably still within about 5 miles of the where the Americans are. We pull up alongside a row of cottages. We're in with it. I think we stay there a couple of days. There's a family there with three daughters. We've got photographs of them. And we then push on. We're then told to push on another couple of miles farther. Then we come to a place which is there's scraps not between us, but I think C Squadron get involved, and then we're told to go up onto a place called Chapel Hill. And this is quite a high feature, very high up. And when you look down, you can see some of the what they call they're actually airborne troops down on the lower ground. We're well up in the trees. And I've got a photograph, as you've seen, with their tank camouflaged up in between the trees. We stay up there for about two.
How did you put that camouflage on? Was it the same?
No, it's actually all fur. But bear in mind, they've had a lot of snow up there, and the trees are covered in snow. And all we do is we push our gun snout, the muzzle of the gun, through, and then you can see down over into the valley. But it's very, very cold. I don't think I've ever been in such a cold place. Tanks are cold anyway in the winter, very cold in the winter and bloody hot in the summer. And the smell is terrible anyway, because the hot engine oil and there's hydraulic oil. And it's very claustrophobic in the tank anyway. I don't know whether I mentioned this, although it didn't seem to worry me too much. Anyway, I think we were up there 2 days and it was very, very cold. We're then told to come back off the hill.
Did anything happen while we were up there?
There was some shelling going on. Just intermediate shelling, really. You know, it wasn't just a number of guns firing into us. It was the occasional shell. We were then told to come down. We were led down the hill by Steele Brownie. I can always remember this. And he drove straight through a bog. The first tank went down up to the top of the tracks. I was then moved round in front to try to tow it with their tow rope. And I got into a worse state. We had three tanks in the bog. Still Brownlee, in the meantime, is told to go back and join the squadron, which is the norm anyway.
That's A Squadron, still, yeah, four troops. Yeah.
That's the norm. If an officer, a troop officer, gets knocked out or his tank gets damaged or what he then has to take over from one of the other townsmen. And he drops us in this fog, and it takes 4 to 5 hours with three recovery vehicles. That's they're the Scambles and two tank recovery vehicles. It's the bottom of the tank with the turret removed. And then we're pulled out, we go back, and the following morning we then return to Brussels. The roads were so bad that when we were going out of the village, I was lead tank anyway. In fact, I was driving a captain back. Joe always had to go to another tank, and I led the squadron out, and we reversed up this hill for about 3/4 of a mile to get up to the top. We found it easier to reverse than to go forward. And then we stopped halfway back to Brussels, billeted again in a number of houses, picked up the following morning, tanked back to Brussels, dropped them off, back to Ypres, and then we carried on with the normal training that was going on. We were then placed in...
So as far as you were concerned, although there was shellfire...
There was tank. We didn't really... I think you could say that we really not involved in any action, but some of the squadron were, but as far as I was concerned, we weren't. But we were still there as a backup to the Americans.
But basically just a bit of shell fire onto
That's
Chapel
all,
Hill,
yeah.
But no fighting in squadron's area.
Well, I'm not saying about the squadron, but in the troop.
Your troop. Now, what about, you got back to Ypres, and you were there for quite a while now.
I think we were there for something. Well, anyway, I forgot to say that we spent Christmas up in the Ardennes. We came back, I think, around about the middle of January. By the time we got back there, of course, we'd missed our Christmas dinner, and the first thing that was thought of, get the goodies for Christmas. And we had our mess at one of the far sides of the far end of a big square. I can remember this. The squadron office, I believe, was at the top side. And so we had our dinner, our Christmas dinner, at Ypres, I think, round about middle January.
And what was it like? Was it a traditional with...
Yeah, served by the officers. So it was the traditional army, the traditional Christmas dinner relating to the army. It was served by the officers.
Much drinking?
I think it was more or less cans of beer. In any way, you'd never get any spirits or anything, not even... Not in MS.
Would it be cans or bottles?
Cans.
And it's all right.
I'm not so sure. It was cans.
But the equivalent of cans. Cans is a modern thing for what it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's in bottles.
Now, what about the introduction of the Comet? Because we glided past that. They'd started coming in before Christmas.
Also with the Comets, there are driving instructors coming in and also gunnery instructors. But we found that once the tanks had come in, this warehouse was absolutely covered with tanks. We found as drivers that we didn't need a lot of intuition anyway. You know, we felt that we could. I've had the feeling, and I think we all had the feeling, drive one, you can drive them all. Maybe basically wrong, but we didn't need a lot of instruction on the driving, although it was a totally different tank.
Could you describe? Because I'm not familiar with the Comet at all. I'm sure a lot of people are. What was it like inside? Can you describe? You know, give
we
us
didn't
a,
have we didn't have anywhere near the room in the Comet that we did in the Sherman. We were...
Was it lower then?
Oh, it was a lower tank. Oh, yeah, generally it was a lot lower. To me, it looked like a tank. The Sherman never looked like a tank to me. But there it goes.
So, did you have a co-driver?
A co-driver. And he had
still?
He had a Beezer machine gun in the front.
Beezer?
That was the traditional English machine gun. So there was a 77mm in the turret and a Beza in the turret, Beza machine gun in the turret, and a Beza machine gun in the hull that the co-driver used.
What was it like to drive? You said it was... Was it the same controls?
For me, totally different, the driving position, because with the Sherman you had long steering arms that came out from the foot of the from the base of the tank, but on the Comet you had the pneumatic hydraulic arm, and you had two levers of a movement of about 12 inches, one on either side. That was the
and again they reduced the speed on one track so it would turn that way
and sped up on the other one. I think the engine was a Rolls Meteor or a Rolls Royce Merlin. To me, it was a Rolls Royce of tanks. It was the best tank we'd ever been in, the best tank I'd ever driven, and it was a beauty. But we didn't have, especially in the turret, we didn't have the amount of movement.
So what was so good about it then? Why was it the best?
Well, first, he had to be the best kid that had a better gun on it. I think it was more comfortable. I think the driving positions of the were much better in the Comet. Against the Sherman, I mean, it was a tank. It was a seat that moved up and down to allow you to drive down or to drive in the up position. With the Comet, you sat on the floor of the tank. In an armchair, I must say, as an armchair position, and you did have periscopes, but mainly you drove out the when the front hatch was opened, you drove out of probably about a 12 inch, probably a little bit more aperture. And this, of course, now you basically the war is beginning to close up a lot. And it was very rarely that we drove with in the closed position.
So that aperture could be closed for obvious reasons.
Well, it had to be closed and use periscope on either side.
So it sounds like although there was less room, that what was there was better designed, and you were, although there was less room, you were more comfortable.
A lot more comfortable. Well, I'm really talking about the driver's compartment and also the gunner, the hull gunner. But the turret was very claustrophobic, although the tank is claustrophobic. But there wasn't nowhere near as much room in the turret as there was in the Sherman. And, of course, the inside the turret of a Sherman, you had more height than there is in the Comet.
And did they moan about that, or the gunner?
No. There wasn't a lot of moaning about it because it was such a... It was the Rolls-Royce of tanks.
Was it faster? Or was it...
I think it was about 35, and I think the Sherman was something in the region of 32. But, of course, it was that much more comfortable on it. It had the Christie suspension out for all the cruiser tanks of the... British Army, which much better than the solid, what I term to be the solid suspension of the Sherman.
What about the armour?
Yes, that was a good deal thicker. I don't know what the thickness of the armour was, but it was thicker than the, and I think it was thicker all round than the Sherman.
And what about the liability to catch fire?
That decreased considerably.
Why would you say?
I think this is something I can't really answer.
It was just an impression.
I don't know whether it was. It could be an impression, and plus the fact the war is beginning to come to a climax. Really, it's coming to an end. We're not through the Caen area. We're not through the early parts. And you know, it's. I think it begins to get a different war And in fact, I would suggest probably a little easier.
So it was never tested in the way the Sherman was?
No. Well, no, I don't think it was.
But your impressions was, as you said, the Rolls Royce of tanks. Yeah, it's perfectly clear that you were happy.
I think everybody else. No, I'm talking for myself, yeah. It was a Rolls Royce of tanks.
Now, so what about, so you go on exercises and I mean, what was the...
exercises. What we were mainly doing, the guns were being fired in and they were firing them into Dunkirk. This was still
out to sea.
This was still held by the Germans.
Oh, I see. Sorry, yeah.
So we were firing into Dunkirk. All the guns were. I can't remember where the firing range was. I think this was fitted up through the division.
So it was firing practice, but it was practice. It was also
practicing on the Germans in Dunkirk. Of course, we were taking each tank at a time, you know, going to the firing range, each tank. We didn't leave a tank up there, every tank. There wasn't, I don't think there was any schemes done at all there. I'm pretty sure there wasn't. So it was a daily basis of gunnery, driving, general. There was one thing I can remember. I don't know how it came about, but we were down by the canal. I think we were down a rest period, and all of a sudden there was a 77. One of the 77s went off in the warehouse, went out the roof. Now, why they were mucking about with the ammunition, I don't know. It was from a troop, and it went out through the roof, and according to Steel Brownlee, they went to try to find out where the shot landed. Now, whether or not they did, I don't know. But I will also say, now, I don't know whether you'll come across Buchanan, he said it was his tank that fired it. But there was a 77 that fired out of there. There'd been a lot said about it on our newsletters and such like. They all remember this gun going on, this 77 going on.
Now, did you stay with the same crew, you know, when you got your new Comet? I mean, were you still with Ives, Coleman and Hodson?
No. I was in a totally different troop, and I'm in two troops now. The whole of the squad
still
really
eight,
seemed to have a swing. Yes, still with Ives, but seemed to have a swing round, in fact. A lot of the crews were coming out that had been knocked out, and they were just coming back, you know, in the early days of the, they've come back to join us in Ypres, a lot of them. And in fact, Tommy Smith came back to Ypres then, and he came into two troop.
And who was in your crew? Who's your tank commander?
Now, this is something I can't remember. I know the troop leader, which was Hill. I know at one time I drove a Sergeant Anderson, and in fact I was knocked out with him. I can remember the gunner, and his name was Shearer, Jock Shearer. I can't remember any of the other crew members, and I can't remember the crew commander, only the gunner.
Now, anything else to do with the new tanks, or was that it for the moment?
Yeah, I think that was basically all. You know, you can't, I don't think you can go any farther than say what, you know, what a, to us, what a lovely tank it was.
Now, what about, how are you getting on with the Belgian, with the people of Ypres? Because I believe, I mean, some of the men actually married Belgian women.
Oh,
I mean,
how? It was me, yeah, because I think
Jeff Hayward.
Yes, they were fine people. I mainly with our lady that used to look after us in the, when I say look after us, we spent a lot of time with her. You know, she was a marvellous lady.
This is the same place.
Yes, this is where the bank manager I don't think he really liked us being there, and I think this is basically because he was away a lot, but I wouldn't go any farther than that. But it was a lovely place to be, and yes, the civilians, I think, would did appreciate us being there. You know, we were always, I think, welcomed, and when we left them, it was a, you know, a tearful. We used to go a lot to the battleground.
I was going
to
ask.
First World War battleground. We used to visit them quite a lot through the Menin Gate, and we used to visit these quite quite a lot.
How did it affect you? So, I mean, because the big graveyards around.
I think you've got to say that we were in a lot easier a war than what they were, and you know, when you read some of the. What's it that was up on the board where I think they got 5,000 died in one gas attack and all that. You know, I feel that there was no comparison. And when you see the trenches and the way they had to live. And also, I think another thing that opened things up, when you went through the Menin Gate, and that is, I don't know whether you've been through it, it is absolutely marvellous to see all the... and of course we were also there when they used to come out every night. The fire service used to blow the bugle, the last post, I think it was, and this used to happen when we were there. Yeah, we used to do a lot of visits to the the old battlefield. But it was a nice place and nobody really wanted to leave. Well, I suppose the reason they didn't want to leave was because we were perhaps going to, you know...
How was your nerve holding up overall? I mean, you'd been in action quite a bit, you know.
I thought nothing of it. We were... I think this was a booster. I think it was a booster to get this tank. There's no doubt about it. And when I keep emphasising this tank, even we haven't come to using it yet, but I still think it was the, and it, I think still proved that it was.
Now what about, you advanced first to the Rhine and then into Germany?
No, because I went on to leave. I went on leave from Ypres on, I think it was 7 days, it may have been a little bit more, but I'm pretty sure it was 7 days from Ypres. So I left Ypres. 3 days, I think 3 days before they left Ypres.
What about your leave?
Oh yes, this was something that was really looked forward to. I can't even remember where I went over from, but that I think is beside the point. Yeah, I had 5 good days. It was nice to see my mum and dad, although we all had the numerous letters and parcels. You know, I think it was a little bit different to be in with, say, from the Middle East and such. Like, you know, we were only just over the water from them. And then when I came back off leave, the regiment had moved some way out of Ypres. I don't know where, but some way out. And then there was a few schemes, because we were waiting to cross the Rhine. A few schemes went on because we hadn't had anything since we had the new tank, and this was just really to get familiar with the working with, you know, with troops together, you know, each troop working as a troop and then as a squadron.
So what about when you moved off finally for the Rhine?
Yes, that not frightening. It was to see this river and see all the Bailey bridges, because the bridge, the Rhine had been crossed with the time we got there, and it was a massive structure that had been put across all on these pontoons.
What was it like crossing a pontoon bridge in a dirty great tank?
I think it's the first time, because normally it was Bailey bridges that we were crossing, but this is the first time. Well, I think you'd already seen these tanks going across it, but nothing to frighten. But each boat seemed to, each pontoon that you went across seemed to it was a movement like this, a wavy movement right across the water. Yes, it was good to think that we were in Germany, but though there again we didn't know what we were going to what we were in for. Okay, we're over the line. A couple of days away, and we're coming into harbour. We've been in action for 2 or 3 days. This is quite a long movement whereby a troop may be told to go down to a river. They're frightened that the bridge is going to be blown. You get down there, the bridge has been blown. Okay, the troop then is told to follow the river along to try to get a bridge that's intact, see if they can get across. If this isn't available, okay, the Royal Engineers are called for to bring up bridging equipment. Then, of course, when the bridging equipment is brought up, there's then made a little bit of bombing, but mainly shelling, because they've got the bridge, or where the bridge was pinpointed. In other words, the REs are under a lot of bombing and shelling until the bridge is built. Anyway, a little bit farther on, we come into harbour. All the squadrons are in bar A, HQ, C and B, they're all on their hedge road. We're coming in last. The tank in front of me, which is Tom Hill's tank, Tommy Smith driving, he's underneath a tree. There's a few trees about in there. We're right up on his tail, and we're still held up, we can't get in. So I'm nose to tail to him, and he's under this tree. He's sitting out on the above the tracks. There's a platform that runs along the length of the track. He's sat out there, I'm sat out there, I'm shouting across to him. The engines are still running. And HQ apparently are there cleaning their guns, and one got an HE up the spout. It hits the tree above Tommy Smith, and kills him outright. All of a sudden, he goes backwards over the tracks. I try to get back down inside with a hell of a struggle. And there's an infantry man injured, Tommy Smith is killed, and his co-driver is injured. Now, if it had been an AP shell, it wasn't, I know, there would have been no problem. It would have gone through the tree. But it was just like air burst, really. It hit the tree and splattered the tank in front of me. And that was Tommy Smith, and he was the one that was injured with me at St. Martin de Breffis.
So,
and funnily enough, he was buried in a churchyard nearby, so I don't know whether he ever went into a cemetery. You know, a military service, but bearing in mind it's in Germany now.
What happened about the person who'd accidentally... I mean, how had the gun come to be accidentally fired?
Well, apparently they were cleaning him. I don't know how what happened, but we do know it was an HQ gun. These, of course, are things that does happen and will and always will happen. You know, you can't cater, I suppose, for these type of things going on.
Did it rattle you?
Yeah, because I knew him so well. Yeah, I think it did, really. And, you know, it was before my eyes, really. I can go and see him going over the, you know, over the tracks. Oh, yes, it was. I suppose that could be said, you know, it was a frightening thing, really.
And what other incidents do you remember? I know you don't remember the advance to Germany place by place. We're not looking at what other incidents. Because I know coming up you were hit. The tank coming. Anything else?
I think probably we're well into Germany now.
Was there much fighting with that?
Well, it was sporadic, you know. Sometimes we'd do nine miles a day without coming across anything, you know. I think it depended really. When the troop leaders after.